Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. One of its most interesting and certainly most thoughtful observers, as well as practitioners for quite some time, is our first guest. She is Corey Shockey. Today she is a resident fellow at the Hoover Institution in California. She previously served in a number of positions in the senior ranks of the United States government, including as the Deputy Director of the Policy Planning Staff at the State Department, and also on the National Security Council during President George W. Bush's first term, where she served as the Director for Defense Strategy and Requirements. She's the author most recently of State of Disrepair: Fixing the Culture and Practices of the State Department. A lot of disrepair at the moment, Corey Shockey. Let's talk a little bit about it. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be back with you, Frank.
You have recently written at your blog at Foreign Policy Magazine's Shadow Government a very thoughtful piece, it seems to me, about the president's deal with Iran. But before we get into the particulars of that deal and your thoughts on it, talk a little bit about the decisions, the practices, the policies that the Obama administration has been pursuing that, in your view, have shaped some of the very dubious choices that it has made in various aspects of foreign policy, notably with Syria and now with Iran.
I have been struck listening to the administration talk about Syria and at how much they believe they were trapped into this position by a public unwilling to support intervention in Syria. And what they said about Syria is also what they are saying about the Iran deal, which is the American public won't stand for another war in the Middle East. And they're certainly right that the public is weary, but they don't take any responsibility for the fact that my mom doesn't think they have a good policy on Syria or on Iran. And what they keep waving away, as they keep waving public opposition away, as though it were the law of gravity or an immutable force of nature or an act of God, instead of the function of their policies.
Talk a little bit about those policies as you've seen how they've shaped that kind of public attitude.
Well, the first and most important was writing off a war we were winning in Iraq and saying that not only should the war never have been fought, but that the strategy that had turned it around was, you know, was a mistake. So that's the first point. The second point is they then proceed to apply that same strategy to the war in Afghanistan. But under-resourcing it and setting a timeline at the beginning of our engagement, which tells both our friends and our enemies that we are less interested in winning than we are in leaving. And so it complicates the possibilities of winning the war in Afghanistan. The way that they have not had a policy that tells friends and enemies alike when we will intervene and when we will not. They don't have a values-based foreign policy. And so enemies see opportunities and friends see us making choices that they feel endanger them. And right now, you know, the fact that we weren't clear about whether we would support Mubarak when public opposition to him built, I frankly think we are right not to support authoritarian governments. But as Jim Mattis, the former CENTCOM commander, has said, he defies anyone to tell him what our foreign policy is in the Middle East.
It does leave one scratching one's head. Let us talk, Khorashaki, about the sort of specific case in point of Iran. The message that we have sent to friends like Israel by blindsiding them about secret negotiations, the degree to which the deal itself bespeaks a determination to get a deal at any price. Presumably, this follows on to this this notion that they didn't have any choice. They're victims in making a very bad deal. But characterize, if you would, how bad the deal is, as well as how we got to it, Khorashaki.
Well, if it actually is an interim deal that gives Iran 6 months for Rouhani to consolidate power, rein in the hardliners, and give up the Iranian nuclear program, it could be the gateway to a good deal. But I don't see any evidence that that's where the Iranians are on this. And the Obama administration, in justifying making the deal, what they said, what Ben Rhodes, the Deputy National Security Advisor, said was, Americans don't want another war in the Middle East. And what they ought to be doing, instead of emphasizing to the Iranians that our threats of taking military action are incredible, literally cannot be given credence, what they should be doing is spending a whole lot of time and effort explaining why if Iran doesn't make a deal that gives up their nuclear program, we actually will destroy it.
That is certainly not a message that has been sent to them so far. And as you say, I think the likely results in terms of final deal, if there ever were to be one. I learned the other day that this interim deal can be extended apparently indefinitely if the parties so choose, and particularly with the president signaling that they can have enrichment despite him saying that they can't.
Despite U.S. Security Council resolution,
yeah,
which the president claims as
yeah.
the basis of legitimacy for his policy.
Yeah, on the face of it, it doesn't add up, that's for sure. Speaking of not adding up, talk a little bit, Khorashaki, if you would, about the Obama administration's dealings with another part of the world, China, specifically what you take, looking at it from the left coast of the United States, of Vice President Joe Biden's travels to China and other parts of the Far East, and the extent to which this fits the pattern that you've just described in terms of, I think you put it, incontinence policies.
It really does fit the pattern, Frank. You know, Biden prefaced the trip by saying what we needed to do, what he was going there to do, was to explain to China that, you know, they need to stop threatening America's allies in the region and to get America's allies, Japan and South Korea, to work more closely together. And then Biden gets there as the Chinese arbitrarily declare an air defense zone in excess of international norms and threatening to both Japan and to South Korea. And the American military makes the right choice, which is to fly through it with military aircraft and test what the Chinese will do. And then the White House declares that American civilian aircraft should file flight plans with the Chinese. As with Afghanistan, having a military strategy that they don't have the political will to support with non-military measures. And so the message to the Japanese and South Koreans is that the Obama administration is not going to carry out any threats it makes to China.
An unreliable ally.
Yeah, and what you see predictably is the Japanese and South Koreans declaring their own air defense zone, which now people are starting to ask whether we're going to defend with them, and the Japanese feeling dangerously isolated.
This seems to me to be a formula for nuclear proliferation in the region, if
Absolutely.
Nothing else, as they seek to provide for their own security in the absence of a reliable America. Khorashaki, this is a subject for a much longer conversation. When we last visited together, we talked at some length about electromagnetic pulse as an attack scenario threat to us. I worry about this in connection with several of the places that you've been talking about, Iran, and also in East Asia, North Korea. Is this something we should be taking seriously and taking steps to correct our vulnerability to it?
You created great concern for me that we need to be taking this risk seriously. And I need to study up, and others need to study up as well.
Well, we will give you a chance to study up on it and help, hopefully, with that education process and have you back to talk about it more. Kari Shaki, you're one of the most thoughtful analysts of these matters, and we'd love to have your help with this very important challenge, among others, that we're facing as a result of the Obama legacy and national security policy. Keep up the great work that you do at the Hoover Institution. Come back to us very soon. Thank you, Kari. Next up, we'll be talking with Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch about the purging of the FBI files to make sure they're not offensive to Muslims. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.